Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, seeing Gajendra in such aggrieved position, the unborn Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, immediately got down from the back of Garuda by His causeless mercy and pulled the king of the elephants along with the crocodile out of the water. Then, in the presence of all the demigods who were looking on, the Lord severed the crocodile's mouth from the body with His disc. In this way, He saved Gajendra, the king of the elephants. This is the last verse of this chapter, and there is no purport to that. So thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Gajendra's Prayer of Surrender. Gajendra's Prayer of Surrender. So, since it's the last verse, and since this verse doesn't have any purport, so we'll just briefly discuss the essence of this chapter. This chapter is also known as Gajendra Mokshan, the deliverance of the king of elephants. And the story goes like this: Gajendra, in his previous life, he was a king in southern part of India, in South India, and his name was King Indradumna. And he happened to offend Augusta Muni, a very powerful sage. And Augusta cursed him that he would be born as an elephant. So according to Augusta's curse, he was born as an elephant. He was a king and the leader of the elephants. And one day, as this king of the elephant, Gajendra, was sporting with his female associates and other elephants in the water, like elephants like to sport in water, as if they're taking a very nice bath. There's a famous statement that Prabhupada often mentioned, is the kunjarasnana, the elephant's bath. They take bath very nicely, but as soon as they come onto the land, they pull up, they take dust and smear their body with the dust, and they also roll on the dust. So after taking the bath, their body is wet, and as they roll on the dust, the whole body becomes full of mud. So they clean in one hand, but the next moment, they become dirty again. Anyway, the point is that the elephant was taking the bath. And at that time, there was a crocodile in the water. So the crocodile just bit into his leg. And they kept fighting. For a long time they fought. And although elephant is a very powerful creature, very powerful animal, but in the water, it's in a foreign land, in a foreign place. And the crocodile is a creature of the water, so there the crocodile is more powerful. So eventually the elephant lost its strength. And when the crocodile was pulling the elephant into the mid-water, in the depth of water, at that time, Gajendra, due to his previous life's sukriti, due to his previous life's cultivation of Krishna consciousness, remembered Krishna. And he felt that now that the time has come for me to leave my body, let me offer my last prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he picked up a lotus that was growing in the water. And he offered the lotus to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his prayers. And As a result of that, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, immediately came running, riding on the back of Garuda. And as it has been described here, the crocodile was biting onto the leg of the elephant, and that's how he was dragging the elephant onto the water, depth of water. So the crocodile was biting onto the elephant's leg. So Krishna, he pulled the elephant, catching the elephant by its trunk. And along with the elephant, the crocodile also came hanging onto his leg. And then he released his Sudarshan Chakra, his chakra, and his head was severed. And in this way, the Gajendra was saved. The next chapter will describe how Gajendra, now liberated from his previous sinful reactions, now he is delivered by the Lord. He came in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to his prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord came personally to save him. And so Gajendra then was taken back to the spiritual sky by the Lord. So that is the incident that has been described in Srimad Bhagavatam. This also has been described in other Puranas, this Gajendra Mokshan episode. And one of our acharyas also gave another, through this anecdote, he gives another simile to this episode. That simile is that the Gajendra is a living entity. And he went to the sport, the place, the lake where he went to sport is the material nature. And in the material nature, as soon as a living entity comes out to the material nature, death is there. It grabs him. Life actually is a constant struggle between death and the living entity. The death tries to finish him off, and the living entity struggles to remain alive. Our life is actually a struggle to remain alive, struggle for existence. And this struggle goes on through the four phases of life. The first 25 years, second 25 years, third 25 years, and fourth 25 years. These are the four phases, and in this way a living entity lives for 100 years. Just as the day has four phases, morning, noon, afternoon, and evening, then comes night. Similarly, the human life also has four phases, and he goes through these four phases of life, and then he succumbs to the onslaught of death, the crocodile in water. Then when he is dying, if he can remember Krishna at that time, at that very critical moment when one is about to leave his body, if he can remember Krishna at that time, then he will become free from the clutches of death. Krishna will come and kill death, and the living entity will be rescued and taken back to the spiritual sky. So this is the important lesson that we must learn. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam throughout is giving us this instruction. All the Vedic literatures in essence is giving us this instruction. Ante Narayana Smritihi. At the end of your life, remember Narayana, remember Krishna. If you remember Krishna at the time of death, then your life has been successful. And the entire life is an opportunity to prepare ourselves for that particular time, the time when we are going to leave our body. Our life should be designed in such a way that we can remember Krishna at the time of death. And if we can, then yes, life has been perfected. Because why the time of death is so important? Because at the time of death, we become free from the bondage of our gross material body. We are free now. As long as we have the body, we are entangled, we are trapped, we are bound to this material nature. As long as we have the body, we have to eat, we have to sleep, we have to make so many different arrangements. So when the time of death comes, at least now we are free. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki jai, Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai ki jai, Jai Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So that's why the time of death, it's so important to remember Krishna at the time of death. Because now we are free from the bondage of this body. But it won't happen automatically. It won't happen just by chance. Sometimes some people think, oh, at the time of death, I will remember Krishna. Now let me do all kinds of nonsense. No, that won't work. You won't be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. Why not? Because the time of death is something like falling asleep. When you are asleep, can you guide your mind? Can you, even before going to sleep, can you say, tonight I am going to dream of Krishna? Or tonight I will dream that I have become a king? No. When we fall asleep, then we don't really have the will to direct our thoughts. Therefore, it needs a preparation. Actually, it needs a lifelong preparation. As long as we are alive, we have to prepare. What is the preparation? We have two types of material bodies. One is the gross material body, the other is the subtle material body. At the time of death, we are free from the bondage of the gross material body, but the subtle material body doesn't die. Even after death, the subtle material body remains. And it is the subtle material body that takes us to our next destination. And as we act accordingly, the subtle material body takes its shape. Sometimes don't we say that that man is like an angel? One who acts like an angel, his subtle material body takes up the shape of an angel. Because the way we act, all the imprints of our actions remain in our body, in our subtle body. Don't you see how our actions affect our subtle body? When you do something good, how do you feel? You feel good, you feel light. And when you do something wrong, even though no one saw you, how do you feel? Don't you feel heavy inside? So this is how all our actions are leaving their imprints in our minds or in our subtle body. So the consideration is that as we act accordingly, our subtle body will take shape. If we act like an angel, our subtle body will take the shape of an angel. If one acts like an animal, don't you say that that man is a pig? Because he acts like a pig, so his subtle body also takes up the shape of a pig's subtle body. So the subtle body has already taken the shape. So after he leaves the body, then the subtle material body carries the soul who acted like a pig and got developed the body of a pig, what kind of body he will be awarded by nature? Exactly. So he will be placed into an appropriate womb. And there he will develop an appropriate body according to his subtle body. On the other hand, if one acted like an angel, he'll also be given an appropriate gross material body. So that's the law of nature. And that's why it is so important that we act in an appropriate way. We become free from the bondage of gross body. But as I mentioned, we can't become free from the bondage of subtle body like that. Subtle body, we are not going to live at one point and go away. Subtle body will not die. But subtle body can be transformed. Transform means we can become free from the bondage of subtle body. Subtle body has to become spiritualized. That's the only way we can become free from the subtle body. Otherwise, as long as we have a subtle material body, we have to come again and again in order to get an appropriate gross material body and go through our karmic reactions. So how do we get free from the bondage of the subtle material body? Subtle material body consists of three elements. I'm sure all of you remember. What are those three elements? Very good. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. Now, when the mind is engaged in thinking about Krishna, that is the instruction Krishna is giving us. Man, mana, bhava. What is the business of mind? To think of Krishna. That's the only business the mind actually has. Our mind should have. Think of Krishna. So when the mind thinks about Krishna, then what happens? The mind becomes spiritualized. In this way, when one is constantly engaged in thinking about Krishna, teshang shatata yuktanam bhajatang priti purvakam, then what is Krishna saying? Dadami buddhi yogantam. Dadami means I give. Buddhi yogam. Buddhi means what? How many of you know the Sanskrit word buddhi? Intelligence. So when one becomes constantly engaged in serving Krishna, then Krishna purifies his intelligence and allows this intelligence to become connected to him, buddhi yogam. So intelligence now is spiritualized. And in this way, when one becomes engaged in serving Krishna, then what happens to his false ego? Jiver swarup hoy Krishna nitya das. When one has become engaged in serving Krishna in this way, what happened to his false ego? Does he have any false ego left? He's situated in his swarup, in his spiritual identity. So in this way, mind, intelligence and false ego through proper engagement in Krishna consciousness become spiritualized. So then what happens? Then the living entity, is dwelling in the body in his swarup. Jiver swarup hai. Krishna nitya das. So what is his subtle body? Where is his subtle body? He doesn't have a subtle body. And that stage is called swarup siddhi. Swarup siddhi. The achievement of his spiritual perfection. So there, at that time, the pure spirit soul is residing in this apparently gross material body. Free from subtle body. That stage is called Sarup Siddhi or Jivan Mukta stage. Iha Jasya Harer Dasye Karmana Manasa Gira Nikhilasya Pyavasthasu Jivan Mukta sa Uchyate. Jivan Mukta. Although he is living, but he is in a although he is living in this material condition, apparently he is liberated. Jivan Mukta. Although he is in his gross body, gross material body, but in this respect also Prabhupada is giving an example. Like iron, when the iron is in contact with fire, what happens to the iron? It becomes red hot. Then is it iron or is it fire? It's fire. So although apparently he is dwelling in a gross material body, but because of his spiritual perfection, that body is not material anymore. It is spiritualized. It's spiritualized. So that is the condition of that is the state of a pure devotee. He is perfected, he is spiritualized. And then, when he leaves his body, what will happen? He is already a pure, liberated spirit soul. What will happen? He will go back to the spiritual sky. And that stage is called Vastu Siddhi. There are two types of siddhis, two types of spiritual perfection. Sarup Siddhi and Vastu Siddhi. Sarup Siddhi is where he is in his spiritual identity, but he is still in his material nature, in his apparently material body. But when he leaves the body, now the pure spirit soul goes back to the spiritual sky. So that is the process that pure devotional service awards a living entity. Or that is the process of becoming, achieving one's spiritual identity. So this process is perfect. Now it's up to us how we are going to become engaged in practicing this process. I was also told to speak something about book distribution. It's about to start. Or has it already started? The Sankirtan Marathon? Okay, from 1st of December. The month-long marathon. That's why it's a marathon. Non-stop book distribution. Why it is so important that you distribute Srila Prabhupada's books and take all the opportunities to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books? During this Christmas time, this month of December, everyone is very, very excited about Christmas. At this time, how people express their excitement by shopping. They love to acquire things. And they also want to present different gift items to others. So the mood becomes very festive. So especially in the West, now not only West, all over the world, this culture has developed that we take advantage of this situation and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. When everyone is in such a festive mood, give it to them. Because this festive mood, they're very open. During this festive mood, they're very open to accept new ideas. When one is happy, one is open to accept new ideas, new thoughts, new gifts. So at that time, you go and give the books. And this is the time that we are getting getting prepared to embark on this very special mission of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. Now, why book distribution is so important? Because these books are very special books. These books are very special. because these books have the message that can solve all our problems. Material life is full of problems. And these books have the secret of becoming, to be secret of solving all the problems. Now, how many of you feel that ever since you have taken to Krishna consciousness, your problems have been solved? How many of you think that since you got involved in Krishna consciousness, your problems have increased? Okay, but the reality is that we know the problems have been solved. Otherwise, why would we be here? If this process did not give you a better life, why are you here? So although some hands went up, I presume that they went up in a joke. Like, but the reality is our problems have been solved. Okay, let's put it this way. Ever since you accepted Krishna consciousness, did you become happy or miserable?
Happy.
Thank you. You spoke for all of us. So, we have become happy. And the clear indication of this happiness is that we stopped running after the illusory allurements of material nature. Everybody in this world practically is running after the illusory allurements of material nature because they are thinking that they'll become happy. They'll be able to quench their thirst for happiness. But can a traveler in the middle of a desert quench his thirst running after a mirage? No. Rather, more he runs after the mirage, the more miserable he becomes, more tired he becomes. But then somebody comes and tells him, look, that's a mirage, why are you running after that? Come, the real water is there in the oasis. I know where the oasis is, come with me. And who is that person? Who takes us, who gives us the real informations of real water. Yes, he came and gave the information. And those informations are there in the books. That's why it is so important that everybody has an access to these books. Unfortunately, as soon as they get the book, they don't read them or they don't understand them. Like, when I became interested in Krishna consciousness, I thought all the people I knew, they will also take to Krishna consciousness. And I gave them the books, and most of them couldn't understand. And I was disappointed, and that's why I cut off my relationships with him. I thought that if you're that stupid, I don't really want to have anything to do with you. The message is so clear. It took me just a few minutes to recognize the fact that this is what I was looking for. But so the actual thing is, the reality is for everyone there's a time, particular time to come to Krishna consciousness. That's why we should distribute the books. Let the books go out. Even though the books may be collecting dust on their showcases in the bookshelf, but still someday somebody will derive some benefit out of these books. There are so many wonderful anecdotes, so many wonderful incidents like that. Like, I know one person. He was a At that time he was in his late 60s. He was a retired Frenchman. And he was retired, so he was spending his time in all kinds of crazy activities. But one day, he ended up with a back problem. And he was bedridden for over 2 months. So when you're bedridden, what can you do? You can only read books. So he was reading books, and one day it just happened to come across this Bhagavad Gita that someday he got somewhere. He didn't even remember. Most really he got it in some airport. Somebody pushed it, he got it. And so he started to read that book. And as he started to read that book, he became more and more excited about this message of that book. And at the back of the book there was the addresses of different temples. And he found the temple in France. That was New Mayapur. And he resolved that when he got well, he would go to and meet these people. And he did that. He used to live in north of France, in a place called Cancale, near Brittany, in Brittany. And he drove all the way from Brittany to New Mayapur. And he arrived in New Mayapur on the day of Gaur Purnima. And the whole mood was so festive. He became really excited. He was already impressed by the message of this book, and now seeing them, he became even more excited. He thought, if this is their life, I am going to be a part of them. And he did. At first he helped us to save New Mayapur. We were about to lose New Mayapur at one time. Like this man helped us in an incredible way with his money, with his contacts, with his expertise and knowledge, as if Krishna sent him. And this is how it will happen to different people. And that's why we do one thing while distributing books. Somehow or other we make them at least touch the book. Because these books are spiritual. So they have the spiritual potency. And if somebody touches the book, maybe their material life will be finished. Just by touching the book, they'll derive some spiritual benefit. What to speak of when they start reading the book? So that's why book distribution is so important. Prabhupada made it clear to us that book distribution is a most important business. Prabhupada pointed out also that this is the best business also. This is the best business. Prabhupada's instruction is very clear that if you, following his spiritual master's instruction, if you get money, then print books. And Prabhupada accepted this instruction and applied it in his life. Those days also, Prabhupada, if he got some money, he just printed books. Even if he couldn't print books, at least he printed the booklets, printed magazines, printed leaflets, and distributed them. And then he printed Srimad Bhagavatam. Through some great, great struggle, he got them printed, and then he came to the West. And when he came to America, that's what he was doing. He was going into the subways in New York and distributing books. And he told everyone how important it is to distribute books. He encouraged his disciples to start printing magazines, which he started in 1944, Back to Godhead. And in the early days, they used to print them in cyclo style. Not even Xerox machine, not even photocopying machine. The cyclo style is a kind of machine where you make one page in a kind of a printing arrangement, and it prints the pages. And it has another name, I forgot, that machine has. Do you remember Bhagavata Sri Prabhu? Yeah, the Ronio was the company that used to make Ronio. And anyway, so photostat, right, photostat. So now we are initially, those early days, we are photostatting and then stapling them together and distributing them. Then the real book distribution actually started in America when Prabhupada got Krishna book printed. That Krishna book, with George Harrison's help, Prabhupada printed a Krishna book. And that was a first-class publication. And it was printed in Japan. Prabhupada used one of the best printing companies in Japan, Dai Nippon. And Prabhupada wanted to make it really first-class. And they were selling this Krishna book for I think $3 or $5, and it was considered to be impossible to sell them for $5. And they were distributing one book, two books, and if they did one book, they thought they have done something great. But then one devotee, Buddhimanta Prabhu, one day he gave the message, he called up and said he distributed 25 Krishna books. Rameshwar Swami, who was the in charge of BBT and in charge of Los Angeles Temple, at first he couldn't believe that. He said maybe he was bluffing. But when he came back, and it was, he gave the money, and then he saw that it was real. And from that time, they realized that yes, it is possible to distribute 20-25 such books. And then they started to distribute Bhagavad Gita. Then Prabhupada came up with Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is how the book distribution actually started in America. And in this way, we are indebted to Buddhimanta Prabhu to a great extent. Unfortunately, he left the planet a few years ago. But he actually paved the way for book distribution in the Western world in a big way. And then we saw devotees started to distribute thousands of books, hundreds of thousands of books, millions of books. So, and Prabhupada gave a very clear instruction that there is no need to put our money in the bank. Whatever money we have, we should print books and keep them in our warehouse. That is our real asset. And these books, as they go out, they'll spread the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and benefit the world. So now, the time has come to embark on this marathon. And here, so many wonderful examples have been established. Especially, I remember His Holiness Shivram Maharaj. He used to go during Christmas marathon himself from morning till night. Although he was a GBC, although he was a guru, even after that, he was going out distributing books along with the other devotees. And England was one of the biggest in book distribution. So now is the time to get involved. And we have seen how the devotees, especially during the Christmas time, the marathon time, we have seen how inspired, how fired up the devotees used to get. They would distribute books till late night. then come back and snatch a few hours sleep, then get up early before the bathrooms got crowded, took their bath, attended Mangala Arati, and out in the streets, on the streets to distribute books. And there was a backup party that used to supply them, take their prasad, take the supply of books. This way, throughout the day, devotees were distributing books. The spirit was so high those days. Devotees used to wait for this opportunity to embark on this Christmas marathon. And there used to be a competition between the German devotees and the English devotees. As usual. They have a very wonderful rasa, England and Germany. So I wish you all the best for this Christmas marathon. Please distribute lots of books and create an actual opportunity for the world to become spiritualized. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari. Does anybody have any comment or question? Bhagavata Sri Prabhu, any comment? Hare Krishna. You have a question? Yeah. Is there any microphone? Cordless? You can take this.
Maharaj, in the beginning you said that the process of death, remembering Krishna, and I'm just wondering, how does the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga we are very fallen and it's quite difficult by our own endeavor to be Krishna consciousness, how does Lord Chaitanya, by his mercy in this moment of death, how does he help us?
Very nice question. Thank you. How does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu help us to remember Krishna? You see, other ages people were naturally pious. In Satya Yuga they were most pious. In Treta Yuga they became little less pious. In Dwapar Yuga they are somewhat pious, and in Kali Yuga they are not at all pious. So piety is synonymous to one's spiritual inclination. Piety actually means spiritual inclination, spiritually inclined. So in the age of Kali people do not have any inclination for spiritual life. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to create a situation that people will have some sort of spiritual inclination. And that is Sankirtan. They won't be interested to go to the temple and render service to the Lord. They will not be inclined to go to the temple and develop their relationship with the Lord in the age of Kali. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this arrangement. And Jagannath came out, Lord as Jagannath has come out, came on the street to attract the living entities towards his lotus feet. That is one of the reasons why Mahaprabhu spent 18 years in Jagannath Puri out of his 48 years. So, Mahaprabhu is creating this wonderful arrangement. People may not be interested in going to the temple, but people are interested in music. Like we see, when Prabhupada went to America, the youth of America at that time were not interested in Prabhupada's spiritual message, but they loved his music. And they came to join him in his music. Swami used to make music and they liked his music. So that is how they became attracted. And by chanting the holy name, even unconsciously they became purified. So this is Mahaprabhu's mercy. Like people are drawn into the Sankirtan. Like we hear so many people so often tell us, oh, we know you. You all used to chant and you were such nice people. Right? They loved our music. They love people love us. When they see us in the streets, congregationally chanting the holy name and dancing on the streets, people appreciate that. They develop some appreciation, and this appreciation is gradually going to lead people into developing their attachment to Krishna. So that is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is creating our good fortune. Yes? Take the mic.
Swamiji, first of all, thank you very much for a very inspiring prabhachan. The comment I have, I don't know if I understood you correctly, but my comment is as follows. If I serve the Lord with diligence, then I must remember that in order for my love to be pure, it must be unconditional, absolute, and undifferentiable. But if I have some expectation of reciprocity, if I think that the Lord is going to do something good for me, then it becomes contaminated, doesn't it? And secondly, there are two comments relevant here. First is from the Bhagavad Gita, in which I think it's part of Karma Yoga. That means I do things, Karmaniya Bodhikara Shuma Falishikadachana. This is one. And second one is, from Tagore's Gitanjali, actually. Do you understand Bengali? Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't know. Just amar matha noto kore dao he tumar charan dhular tole sokol ahankar he amar dubao chokher jole. And then it says tumar ichcha koro he purno amar jibon majhe. That means even scientifically it can be proved that we are following, whether in the material life or spiritual life, the path that is ordained by the divine. That being so, I mean, what price is full free will anyway? It is a construct, you know. Yes. Thank you.
The first question is that our service to the Lord should be unconditional. There shouldn't be any expectation. And if there is an expectation in return, then it is contaminated. Not really. Because if a living entity, or since a living entity has a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his father, like when a child goes and tells the father, Daddy, I want this, does the father get upset or does he feel happy? Now, our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is that of a loving relationship. He's the Supreme Father. He's saying, Tashang Brahma Mahajyonir Ahang Bija Pradapita. I am the seed-giving father in the vast womb of material nature. So now it depends whether one is a child or whether one is grown up in a spiritual context. If one is a child and if he tells the father, please do this for me, then the father will do it. Like there is no harm in praying to the father. Like initial prayers are like that, you know. Like in Christianity, the prayers are like a child, like, "Oh God, give us our daily bread." Okay, fine. God is giving the daily bread and you are expressing your thanks to Him. When you become a little more advanced, like the devotees in Hare Krishna movement, they don't say, "Give us our daily bread," but they say, "Krishna bara dayamoy, kori bare jiu bhajoy, shaprasad anno dilo bhai." Krishna is very merciful. He has, in order to conquer the tongue, which is the most difficult to overcome of all our senses, Krishna has given us Krishna prasad. So Krishna is giving us. So if we recognize that and become grateful to Him, and if we have some need and if one asks for that, there is no harm in that because of the loving relationship that is there with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But yes, when the child grows up, then he thinks, "Well, why should I ask from the father? Rather, I should take care of the father." So at an advanced stage, one feels that way. Why should I ask from the Lord? I should rather offer to the Lord. I should take care of Him instead of Him taking care of me. So there are different phases of spiritual development and one will act accordingly. And the other things that you mentioned about Tagore, you see, it's fine, you know, like he wrote some nice poetry. But Tagore himself said that I'm just a poet. Like, these are all some sentimental expressions. And therefore, you see, in order to properly practice spiritual life, one has to have a bona fide teacher, bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, it becomes just some sentimental attachment. So, it's nice that he has expressed some nice sentiment that he's saying, he's quoted, that Amar matha nato kore dao he tomar charan tular tale. Please allow me to stoop my head down to your lotus feet. But the question is whether he really did it himself. If you go to that extent, you will see he had some spiritual understanding, spiritual inclination, but because he didn't have a qualified teacher, he could not apply it in his life properly. He mentioned some, he'd expressed some beautiful sentiments, no doubt about that. Like one of his last poems is Jabar Shamoy Holo Bihangir. Bihanga means a bird. The time has come for the bird to leave his nest. Jabar Shamoy Holo Bihangir. Stabdho Giti Bhrashto Nir Pori Bedhulai Aronner Andolane. Due to the shaking of the trees, due to the wind, now his nest is going to fall down. Then he is describing Jabar Shamay Holo Bihangir Stabdho Giti Bhrashto Nir Pori Bedhulai Aronner Andolane. Katokal Ei Boshundhara Atithya Diyeche Kobu Amro Mukuler Gandho Bhara Peyechi Rauhan Bani Dokkhiner Falguner Dokkhine Madhur. So many times this earth has given me such wonderful shelter. Sometimes the spring came with the carrying the fragrance of the beautiful flowers. And in this way he goes on. It's nice, beautifully sentiment has been described. But the unfortunate thing is that he did not really get the proper guidance from a qualified teacher. To understand that he is your parents because you have forgotten who is your parent. Let's not get into that argument, you know. Try to understand. I'll give you an example from Prabhupada's on Prabhupada's statements. Prabhupada was in Pune, in the house of a very, very wealthy person. That person is a relative of Billa's. That person asked Prabhupada, that why, Swamiji, why are you just telling everybody to chant Hare Krishna? Meaning, he implied that why don't you open hospitals, open schools and so forth, hospitals and such benevolent activities. Prabhupada just gave him a very, very small example or asked a question. He said, look, you are a relative of Billa. If you see that Billa's son has become mad and he ran away from home. When you become mad, then you lose your memory. You don't know who you are, you don't know where you are, you don't know where you are going. So Billa's son, Billa, if you all don't know, he is the richest family. Billa family is the richest family. So one of Billa's sons became mad. If one of Billa's sons become mad, runs away from home, then what will be his condition? Although he is the son of the richest man, for a morsel of food he will have to undergo so many trials and tribulations. There will be so many difficulties. He will probably have to beg for some food. And people will laugh at him, mock at him, torture him. Now if you see him in that condition, will you just give him 1 rupee and tell him, go and have a meal? Or you are going to tell him, look, you are Billa's son. What are you doing here in this condition? Come, I'll take you to your father. And then all your problems will be solved. So our condition is like that. We are the children of the richest personality, the supreme personality of Godhead. But we have forgotten our relationship. That's why, because of our madness, because of our entanglement in this material nature, because of our conditioning in this material nature. Now, therefore, we need somebody to remind us who we are, that we are the children of that personality who owns everything and who controls everything. That is our situation, and that is why we need somebody to remind us about our relationship with him. Otherwise, there is no possibility of re-establishing that lost relationship. Through this spiritual activity, through devotional service, what are we doing? We are simply trying to re-establish our lost relationship with him. What these books are telling us, about our relationship with him, and what will be the benefit when we develop that relationship with him. And for that we need a teacher, we need a guide, we need a medium. So please read Prabhupada's books. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Hare Hare.